Hello, it's your boy TT here with you with owner of one of my patented solo casts. I am just jumping on here because, quite frankly, I miss podding, even if it is a solo pod. Not the same, but you know, we'll get there. Andy is, you know, he's gonna be a daddy again fairly soon in the next. I think it's 10 days as of this recording. So, you know, that's all happening. So I think I'm going to try and get on while he's on parental leave a few more times. Or, you know, I've a few stuff I want to talk about. I've been watching stuff. The big thing I want to talk about is the new movie from Zach Cregger, Weapons. It's the big buzzy movie at the moment. And I'll get into a review of that fairly soon. But I guess I also want to clarify this. I'm trying out some new recording equipment in a new space. So if I sound a little funny, I want you to please bear with me. I'm hoping to work the kinks out as I go along in the next couple of weeks. Maybe before I get into movies, I'll just talk about, you know, the obligatory sport wrap up. Man United Premier League started back this weekend. Andy's beloved Liverpool scraped the win, 2 goals in the last few minutes. Didn't think they looked great, to be honest. Liverpool were pretty open, and Van Dijk found out yet again. I'm going to call it now. I think he's finished. Is that the term the kids are used? He looks very leggy at the moment, and I can see why they're trying to find two new centre halves. But like Andy says, you know, it's probably good enough to have him around the group to kind of keep the standards up or whatever. But I don't know. I thought he was exposed quite a bit in the first half. Bournemouth didn't take their chances, and then they did in the second, and they got out of jail. I'll say that for my beloved Man United, it was the opposite. In that we were robbed. Nah, just kidding. We were quite good. Another fucking blunder by our goalkeeper. And again, if I'm blowing out the levels, I'm sorry, folks. Again, it's a new setup for me, but heartbreaking. And the new lads that we brought in, Cunha and Bueno, they looked really good. Mason Mount looked good coming back. De Ligt, fucking, I tell you, he pulled Gyökeres' pants down and did unspeakable things to him. Again, if you're not a football fan, this probably sounds like another language to you, but I thought De Ligt was possibly our best player on the day. Their best player was the goalkeeper, David Raya, fucking pulled out a couple of excellent saves. And then the more I look at it, this penalty that we should have had, the more Stonewall it becomes. But anyway, look, it is a good start. Results-wise, not good, but performance-wise and what would you say, intensity-wise, or, you know, I'm happy. Just got to bring it to Fulham next week and get a result there. That's it, done. Out of the way. Band-aid ripped off. I'll get into Weapons now, and I don't know if any of you folks out there have seen it, but I will tell you it has my wholehearted recommendation to go and do so. I don't know, it's a second major release from Zach Cregger, who is a former sketch comedian with the troupe The Whitest Kids You Know. His first movie, well, his first one that I'd seen, was 2022's Barbarian, which is available to stream on Netflix now, or if you don't play for Netflix, I think it's on the Channel 4 app as well. I was very high on that movie when I saw it. I thought it was really inventive. It is about the perils of staying in an Airbnb, and I'll leave it at that, because if you go in not having watched it, you'll be delighted. Well, I was anyway. Gave it 5 stars, which is high now I think about it. I can't change it now, but and I won't. But it, I was cackling at times. It's really, really good. And this movie, Weapons, I gave it 4.5 stars, but, you know, I can see them flipping around in the next couple of years in terms of a 1 and 2 ranking or whatever. The interesting thing I think about Zach Cregger, like Jordan Peele before him, is that because he is versed in comedy, he knows how to set up, he knows how to set up a joke, but he also knows how to set up a horror sequence. He knows you have to build, and then maybe, if you think the gag has gone one way, some of the best one gags will actually, zig when you think they're gonna zag, and the same goes for horror in this. It's just an interesting comparison. I think these are two guys that'll probably be talking about, like, oh, the future of horror, or the current present guys at the top of the industry in horror. And to be honest, like, the movies that I've enjoyed the most this year have all been horrors. The big three anyway for me were Sinners 28 Years Later and this movie. They're bouncing around my top three or four or five for the year, and yeah, it's been a good year so far. I guess the premise of Weapons, if you have not seen any of the trailers or don't know what's going on, it is a terrifying premise in my mind as a parent. It is that one day a classroom full of elementary school students all just up and leave. I think they said it's 2:17 in the morning. They all leave their house and just run off somewhere, and they're doing that. I think they call it the Naruto run, with the arms outstretched, running straight ahead. To me, it kind of looks like a missile, or something along those lines. A kind of a heat-seeking missile, hence the title Weapons, I guess. It kind of then picks up a month later after they've all disappeared, and the fallout of it. One of the main it's Zach Cregger has described it as Magnolia meets Hereditary, which is fucking catnip to me. I don't know if I would go as far as saying the Magnolia comparisons are completely apt, but they do kind of have, it's a multi-character story that their stories overlap and they bump into each other and stuff like that. He did specifically say that one of the characters in this, Alden Ehrenreich, you may know him as Han Solo. His career has never really recovered from that Star Wars movie. Solo, a Star Wars story. It is hot garbage. And he was seen to be one of the more up-and-coming actors after he had a great turn in the Coen Brothers movie, Hail Caesar. And then the damage that Star Wars movie did to him, he kind of dropped off the face of the earth. But he's back. He's really good in this, and he is kind of styled like John C. Reilly from Magnolia. It's a kind of direct reference to it, but it kind of that's a bit of a reach. It doesn't have the same pathos, I think, as Magnolia for me, but I don't think it's going for it either. I think he's kind of being a bit tongue in cheek with his description of it. He said he'd written it after a former troop mate from the Whitest Kids passed away unexpectedly, and you can see that, like, one of the main themes in this is sudden loss. The teacher is played by Julia Garner of this class. She's lost all her students. She can't understand where they've gone, but also the whole town thinks she's responsible, which there would be some questions asked, definitely. And she's kind of a bit of a mess in that, she is self-medicating to try and get through things and makes some bad decisions. I will say most of the characters in this make a lot of bad decisions, but that's what makes them intriguing in my mind, makes them very human. And I'm going to be vague as I can without spoiling it. But yes, Josh Brolin plays the father of one of the students who's disappeared. He plays a very kind of manly man. He's a contractor, and seems to be a tough dad. And one of the things he's dealing with is that, like, he doesn't think he told his son he loved them enough when he was here, and he has no idea where he's gone. So he's, going through his own sort of, I don't want to say manic episode, but, psychosis, and again, making bad decisions. It has a lot of, I guess, like, for me anyway, a lot of the themes or subtext I took from it was that we as a society have pretty much failed this next generation of kids on every level. Speaking in Ireland, who knows what the next gen are going to be able to buy houses? Let's in terms of that market there. For the Americans, I think it's fairly pointed. The title is weapons. Kids over there have to go to mandatory school shooting training, things like that we have kind of failed to protect our kids. We've opened the door to the internet, which opened the door to, online grooming and all this stuff that we, as a society, as parents, whatever you want to call it, as grown-ups, maybe not parents, but we've not protected our kids enough. Even the idea of kids being weaponized by MAGA supporting parents, and how that ideological mindset will be, handed on to them. That's, again, this is just through my lens, but there's a lot of that in it. And the thing is, the film is so entertaining that you might not even pick up on all this stuff. It was only after I sat with it for a little while that I was like, oh shit, there's way more going on in it there, that meets the eye. The performances across the board are excellent. I mentioned Julia Garner, Josh Brolin, and Alden Ehrenreich. You have Benedict Wong from the Marvel movies as the school principal, who is this kind of, on the one hand, he's very concerned about his teacher and the students themselves. On the other hand, he's very concerned with how this is a bad look, or don't poke the bear. Don't He's encouraging the teacher to not investigate these things so that no more waves are made in the community. So again, another few, I don't know, bad decisions made. I don't want to spoil any of it, but the turns this movie takes are so wild and so much fun. I cannot recommend you go see it on the big screen enough. It's violent at times. It is fucking gory. Lots of blood and upsetting. It is really upsetting at times. You feel sorry for a number of the characters in it. And the fact that the movie is able to get you to that place while being funny, while being scary, while being entertaining, it's a really good trick. It's a really good magic trick. What else was I going to say about it? It nails the ending. That was the thing for me, that if I was like, okay, maybe 20 minutes, I was like, where are we going with this? And then when it kind of kicks into gear at the end, I was like, oh, hell yeah. And there's a couple of bits in it that I was making a lot of noise in the movie when I was watching it. I had a couple like, what the fucks? Or there is a dream sequence in the film that is, it's upsetting. It's kind of spooky and then upsetting. And then when the character wakes up from the dream sequence, for me, they have one of the best line readings of I'm like, why doesn't everybody say this when they've had a bad dream in a movie? And it had me cackling, and the people next to me, I think, were, it was kind of like the three of us were in this kind of agreement there. Afterwards, they gave me the little nod of recognition, like, you enjoyed that? It's like, we enjoyed it too. So I think I have it, around three or four from our movies of the year this year. I would say go see it. There's nothing else out. And if you're a cinema goer like myself, there's not really much else out at the moment. Well, there's a few, but this would be top of the list for me. So, wholeheartedly recommend. 4.5 stars. Probably could have been five.
Dropping all around you.
Bit of George Harrison there with Beware of Darkness, taken from the Weapon soundtrack. That's right, I'm putting songs in my solo cast as well, and you can't stop me. There's another movie that I watched recently that is available on video on demand, so of course I got it through my nefarious ways, but I think it's only actually being released over here this weekend, so might actually time perfectly if you're interested in going to see it. It is the latest movie from Ari Aster, who directed Hereditary and Midsommar, and the underseen, I don't want to say criminally, because I know it's not for everybody, his third movie, Bo is Afraid, starring Joaquin Phoenix. A hard movie to break through. It's very closed off. I mean, there's parts in it where I thought it was great, but it's 3 hours, and it is... It's not what, compared to Hereditary or Midsommar, it's not a good time. It's not a good time. But Phoenix is very good in it, and Ari Aster has re-teamed with him for this movie, which asks you, hey, did you like, sorry, did you like the pandemic? No? Cool. Well, we're going to sit in it for 2.5 hours, and we're going to put a mirror up to yourself and see, hey, did you act this way? During, you know, COVID. Basically, it's set in 2020, in May of 2020, so about 2 months into the pandemic, in a small New Mexico town called Eddington. And yeah, it is an uncomfortable movie that I really think is going to stand the test of time. I think there's a lot of ideas going on in it. Literally the first scene in the movie is Joaquin Phoenix sitting in his car, and he's the sheriff of the local town and everything. The plot is he wants to become the new mayor because he's sick of how the current mayor, played by Pedro Pascal, Ted Cruz is his name, is running things, and you know, he doesn't want to wear a mask. Literally, the first scene is like another cop car pulls up and tells him to wear a mask. Even though he's sitting in his car by himself, they're like, you're over our side of the border. You have to obey our rules. And part of me sympathized with Joaquin's character in there in that, you know, knowing what we know now, you know, you could wear a mask and you still get it. Now, I know it completely... kind of decreased our chances of spreading it around and all, but like, if you're sitting in your car by yourself and somebody pulls up to you and tells you need to be wearing a mask, I can completely understand getting a bit irked. It's more when it starts getting into social situations of the idea of like, you're not wearing a mask going into a shop, everybody else is, why don't you do that, you know? And it just made me think, like, what a fucking mad time for all of us it was. You know, the fact that it's 5 years ago, you know, doesn't... Weirdly, like, it doesn't seem that long ago, but also seems like 15 years ago. And it points the lens at you just in terms of what decisions did you make? Or what? Not even, like, you, but what decisions did we as a society make and that time? How are we acting, you know, on both sides? Whether you're, again, it's very American, whether you're right wing or left wing, it kind of points out that like how everybody was addicted to their phones and this age of information was kind of weaponized, and how there's so many people filming people in this movie that it made me uncomfortable. I was like, oh my God, my skin was kind of crawling. And, it, you know, there's a great cast in it. Like I said, Joaquin Phoenix, Pedro Pascal, Emma Stone plays Joaquin Phoenix's wife in it. You got Austin Butler popping up as He's kind of like a preacher again. Really, like the two biggest, hottest stars, youngest stars, Austin Butler and Emma Stone, are used very sparingly in it, but they're used very effectively. And he's kind of like a guru that is very seductive to people. But it's mostly Joaquin is the show. You know, he's kind of stealing the show center stage. And the movie is 2.5 hours long. You know, it does a bit of a build up. You think, oh, he's starting his campaign and there's going to be this big face off between him and Pedro Pascal. And then about 45 minutes into the movie, maybe an hour or so, the Black Lives Matter movement really comes into the fore. The George Floyd death happens. And for me, it was really interesting because it was like, he points the camera at like all these white teenagers that are like, oh, defund the police, you know, all the, you that's a, you know, that's your part of the problem. And they're like, the police force is like three cops and it has nothing to do with them. Yet, you know, you can see why somebody would be like, well, they're part of the problem completely. But it's something that happened halfway across the country. And part of it is a bit virtue signaling in it, I think. And it points the camera at that, and I was like, Jesus, he's right in that there was a lot of people doing that for clout. Again, using the phone to play the game, to get notoriety online. And it kind of comes to the conclusion that if you can do that well, you will win. You know, you will be successful. It's also a Western. It's, you know, set in a town in New Mexico. Things escalate again without spoiling. Things escalate to the point with the last, I want to say 40 minutes or so, I was like, what the fuck is happening here? But I also was having the time of my life and it was just so funny. It's very darkly funny, this movie. It is not like Hereditary. It is not like Midsommar, where those movies are upsetting at times and thrilling and shocking. And this movie is more uncomfortable. It's bleakly funny. It is designed to provoke. I think some people, when they watch it, will feel very angry. I really appreciated the fact that he was kind of willing to call out everybody and call out all the bullshit that happened during that time. And, you know, like I say, point a lens back at ourselves, point a mirror back at ourselves and see, did you like? Do you like what you see? And I think, you know, he there's certain like nobody's a good person in this movie. If I was to root for anybody, there's one person that you would kind of root for, who is a bit of a side character and gets taken advantage of and treated very poorly, but he's not particularly interested in their interiority. He's interested in seeing them used as a prop because people in that situation have been used like props for decades. He doesn't sugarcoat anything, and like Weapons, it is upsetting, but Weapons is way more entertaining. Weapons had me punching the air and, you know, kind of cheering. This movie did not, but I still have not been able to stop thinking about it, and I would give it another recommendation as well. I think I really like it, what Astor has to say about things, and his last two movies have been a bit more political, a bit more, there's a bit more interiority about them as opposed to being like straight up horror movies. And I'm excited to see what he does next. I think this is going to be, well, I don't know what Bo is Afraid made, but this, I think it made like $5 million, as opposed to, I think Hereditary was A24's highest ever movie at one point. So, you know, he's kind of got cash in the bank to make more stuff, and I hope they keep letting him do it. But I know this won't be for everybody. But, you know, if you're interested, some people don't want to watch, some people don't want to go back to that time period. We just got out of it. Things are back to normal, whatever. It's the first movie about made about the times in COVID that I thought really captured it, its essence very well. And yeah, I didn't necessarily like it, but I was intrigued by it. Like, I didn't like the feeling that, but I'm glad I watched it, and I'm glad it made me feel that way. Does that make sense? So yeah, another recommendation for me. You get it on video on demand, or you will if you go to the movies. I kind of wish, probably wish that I'd waited, but I can only get to so many movies these days, and unfortunately, I had to watch it at home. I think it looked great. Like, it looks amazing. All these vistas that you're conjuring images of Breaking Bad. It's shot incredibly, and a lovely score as well. Kind of haunting score. It's a real modern Western, one that I think that it'll be kind of talked about for the next few years. So yeah. Is Tops there when I Feel Alive again. I took that from the Eddington soundtrack. That's a nice little theme going there. I'm just gonna run through a couple of more things that I watched recently that I enjoyed, and then I'll get out of your hair. I'll sign off. Happy Gilmore 2. I know people are dragging it online, saying they hated it. Me and Andy had a spirited number of voice notes back and forth about this. I literally text them 5 minutes in, being like, "Oh no, I think I'm gonna hate this." But the movie won me round, honestly. People are like, "I gave it 3.5 stars in Letterboxd." They're like, "That's very high." And yeah, I mean, it's by no means a great movie, but you know what? It got to me, man. It got me in the feels. It's too long. It's almost 2 hours, or maybe it's over 2 hours. First one's a tight 90, if not, if maybe even less. It's ridiculous by the end. The whole point plot of the movie is Happy has quit golf and he needs to get back playing golf to pay for his daughter's piano, no, ballet school in Paris. And he's become an alcoholic as well. And then he comes back and he plays golf, and then there's this rival golf championship called Maxi Golf, and they have it's Happy Gilmore and five golfers versus Maxi Golf's best golfers, Haley Joel. I mean, it sounds terrible when I'm listening. Haley Joel Osment is the bad guy, along with Benny Safdie, and lots of it is forgettable. I will say that, you know, but Jesus. I was brought to tears, or close to tears, a couple of times in it. The stuff with Julie Bowen in it particularly has me. And there's a bit at the end where it's like the most ridiculous shit going down. Like, I won't even, if you haven't seen it, I won't spoil it for you. But there is a bit where Happy sees his four sons as, you know, teenagers or young adults, and then it kind of cuts back to he imagines them as kids, and then Julie Bowen is there, and it fucking hit, man. It hit me hard, and, you know, I was pumping my hands in the air when stuff happened, and yeah, it's not a good, it's not by any means. Happy Gilmore is like a classic movie. I think this is what is interesting about this is Adam Sandler's really fucking good in it as well. Like, he's not funny in the movie particularly. Like, the big laughs for me came from Shooter McGavin. Christopher McDonald is great again. The Happy Gilmore stuff is like, I'm sad and I'm an alcoholic and I think about death a lot of the time. And, you know, he plays it really well. He lets everybody else go wackier. Now, I will say, Bad Bunny is in this movie. Everybody seems to love him. I can't stand him. A lot of callbacks to the first movie as well. A lot of clips and stuff. But ultimately, you know, it did it for me. And I have no regrets about it being, you know, a 3.5-star movie. So there, I said it. What else? Oh, I saw Final Destination Bloodlines as well. You know, people were raving about it, saying it was so much fun. It's fine. I'm kind of realizing now, a bit over this franchise. I tried watching a bunch of them in preparation for the movie, and I watched number 3 with Mary Elizabeth Winstead, who is a phenomenal actress, and I was like, oh, and they're all on Netflix, 4, 5, whatever. Didn't go back to the later ones. And then this one is fine. You know, silly stuff happens with premeditated death, and it's a good time. 3 stars. Not really much more to say. It kind of doesn't look very good. I found myself thinking, like, why did they shoot it that way? And soft focus, you know, maybe it was 3D or whatever, but didn't look very good. And quite frankly, I could have done with a couple of ringers in there, you know, a couple of actors you're like, oh, like in Weapons, Toby Huss, who you might know as he's the voice of the dad in King of the Hill, you know, Cotton. If you're a Seinfeld fan, he's the Wiz in Seinfeld. He was in the Halloween movies, the newer ones, and like, he shows up in Weapons, and I'm like, oh, you know, give me one of those guys, pop him in there, you know, a couple of faces, and there's no faces in it, except for the dearly departed Tony Todd. It was his last movie. He looked very ill in it, the Candyman himself, and the movie is dedicated to him. Which is nice, but I wouldn't be rushing to put it on. And then finally, I got to see The Naked Gun. Very enjoyable. I will say it's probably the 4th best Naked Gun movie, because I've just watched the other ones into oblivion. You know, I've seen them all so many times. It's a different flavour of Naked Gun. They're not really trying to be the kind of Leslie Nielsen 50s cop thing. It's kind of more of a Private Eye, but also a bit of Taken in there as well. Like, Liam Neeson is incredibly funny in this movie, and some words when put together and said by him are just really funny. There's a bit in it where Liam Neeson and Pamela Anderson are in a club and the bad guy comes over and he's trying to like keep her cover, and he's like, "Who's this lovely creature you have on your arm, Drebin?" And he's like, looking around, it's like a cherry cocktail being poured. He's like, "Cherry!" And then a picture of like Teddy Roosevelt, like, "Roosevelt!" And then it's like a guy eating spaghetti dinner, like, "Fat bozo scarfing spaghetti." And he's like, "Ah, Miss Spaghetti, how lovely to meet you," you know? Just like played off completely as if the most normal thing in the world was said. And I was like, just a bunch of words like that put together will always make me laugh. They've done a really good job of marketing it, I think. There's the clip of him with his body cam footage. I think it's Busta Rhymes. And he's like, "Oh, yeah, well, let's just check my body cam." And it's early in the morning. He's like, "Oh, it's a little bit later." And it's him like eating a chili dog. And then it's like, he's going to have violent diarrhea. He's like, "Oh, I'm going to ruin another suit." And there's a bit that runs on there for like 5 minutes. That's very funny. There's an inspired bit of, I want to say fantasy sequence in it, that really had me giggling. The whole movie had me giggling, to be honest. But like, it's a nonsensical plot line, as a lot of the Naked Gun movies are. Very funny. Really happy for Liam Neeson and Pamela Anderson in their relationship. I'm rooting for those two crazy kids. And it's a good time. It's 85 minutes. It's a good time. Go see it in the cinema. Wait for Blu-ray or Paramount Plus or whatever it's going to come out on. I just say watch it. I hope it brings back some more comedy. It's done pretty well off a modest budget. I hope it brings back some more comedy movies being made and released in the cinema, because Lord knows we need it. I think back to mid-2000s to, you know, 2015, it was like a different comedy blockbuster every other, you know, month or whatever like that. And now it's like, Jesus Christ, a dearth. Sorry guys, I'm getting worked up of comedy movies. What else? Anything? I watched the first episode of Alien Earth on Disney Plus today. Good so far. It's by Noah Hawley, who's done all the seasons of Fargo, and it's got my man Tim Olyphant as a platinum blonde haired, I think he's a synth as opposed to a android or replicant. He's some sort of robot man, and looks good, looks promising. I'm excited to stick on the second one. But yeah, that's kind of me up to date. I hope you enjoyed listening. You can, you know, I'm going to plug the Patreon here if you want to hear more of my dulcet tones with my main man, Andy. And, well, first of all, you can go back on the free feed, no problem. But if you go over on the old Patreon, you hear more movie talk. We've got a bunch of great miniseries there. God, it's been a while since I've done this. I'm a little bit rusty. We got What's So Great About the MCU? What's So Great About 90s Action Movies? What's So Great About Ryan Gosling? And What's So Great About Big Willie's Flops, a.k.a. Will Smith's Bad Movies? We also have What's So Great About the Films of Tony Scott? What's So Great About Heist Movies? And What's So Great About Movies from the year 2007? Plus a bunch of mini standalone. Fuck. I'm going to ruin another podcast. Standalone episodes, like such as Our Perfect Day, Dream Festival. I know Andy's just, you got bloody tickets to Oasis. He's probably put out a bunch of content now at this stage about that. Good for him. I tell you, it does not sit right with me. 500 quid a pop for fucking for Oasis tickets. They're going to make like 100 million off this shit. Anyway, bunch of good stuff there for the low, low fee of €5 a month. So come on over. We'd be glad to have you. And and I'm going to keep doing a few bits of this on the main feed. Andy said he's probably going to try and fit some stuff on the Patreon as well. And we will keep you posted when we're back in action on the main feed as the Gruesome Twosome. But until then, guys, I hope you're keeping well, and we will speak soon. And you know what? I miss you. I miss you, Ron. When this is over, me and you, we should get an apartment together. I'll see you.
Dream of far away, dreaming on my pillow in the morning.